up? It's Tuesday night. Tune in to Inside the Game. It's time for episode 56, and it's going to be a battle between the sicklies and the healthy guys tonight. As myself and Payne User will be playing the role of the sickly gentleman, and Idra and Jeff will play the role of the healthy,
strapping American StarCraft 2 players.
Yes.
Right. Thanks to Monster.
There you go. There you go. Admittedly, yep, there you go. I have not had Monster in 3 days, which is obviously...
See?
That's why.
You're going to be all right, Weed.
I mean, you know...
Take some right now, you'll be fine by the end of the show.
You're right. Thanks to Monster, one of our sponsors, along with Steel Series, Kingston HyperX. And we got another week. Why the fuck does it say episode 54 still? God damn it. I just changed
that
shit.
I see 56.
It says 56 to me.
What?
Yeah.
No, like the screen, like on the freaking screen itself, like the overlay, it says 54. What?
Oh, there it is. Yeah, you messed it up. And it says September 25th, too.
God. Yeah, I had it right. I just made it like 5 seconds before the show began. Come on. It's one of those days, man.
Mistake that Too Good wouldn't make.
I'm fixing this shit in real time. It's because Too Good doesn't produce his own shows, man.
That's true.
If Too Good produced his own shows, he'd be making the same snarfs left and right.
Yeah,
like the artistic director.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And, you know, I live in Nebraska where the population of people either know how to farm or you're me. So I don't really have anyone else to help me with production around here.
When are we going to get you out of there, Weed?
I don't know, man. When are you going to get here?
No. Nebraska's it's going to be the next big mecca of esports. I can just feel it.
I'm pretty much thinking, like, you know, now you can go to, like, the future birth site of James T. Kirk and shit. Well, why can't Nebraska, since there's nothing else fucking here, why can't Nebraska just be, like, the home of DJ Wheat? I mean, really, like, do we have anything else that fucking important other than Carhenge and a fucking football stadium that becomes
Carhenge?
And
now you're talking about breaching societal gaps.
Wait, is that like Stonehenge made with car parts?
Yes, it actually fucking
How have I not
exists
heard about this?
In Nebraska.
Carhenge. That's not real.
It's fucking real, man. I'm going to bring it up right now. Carhenge, Nebraska. It fucking – the official website for Carhenge, man. It's got an official website. It looks like it was made in about 2000, maybe early, maybe 99. But here you go. The official website for Carhenge located in western Nebraska. And just in case you are planning your trip, Jeff – Carhenge is open 24/7, 365. There you go.
Carhenge named number 2 wackiest attraction.
Wait, what the fuck is number 1 then?
Yeah. Oh,
whatever. I mean,
I'm going
named by who? Like what?
I gotta look now.
There's a panel of people that go around
by
the world.
10/11.
Okay. The 10 wackiest attractions in the U.S.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
Leaning Tower of Nile.
Oh, the only attraction deemed wackier than Carhenge is the Toilet Seat Museum in San Antonio that features more than 800 decorated toilet seat lids, but no bathroom.
That's awesome.
Oh, Jesus. I'll try to fix this. Meanwhile, what's up, guys?
Busy couple of... Well, I don't know. Busy week, man. Esports is picking up here towards the end of the year. It's been – tides are changing.
I know we've talked about it before, but, like, dude, the esports year is extending. It really used to be between, like, April and October, and then it would just stop. And now
fucking
it's –
Home Story Cup having a tournament in December in IPL. You guys, come on. That's
December
supposed to
be
a non-esport.
Supposed to be the off month,
Yeah.
It is. We have 2 events into December, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm?
Oh, crazy shit. Crazy, crazy stuff. All right. I'm going to try to switch this one more time. Oh, there we go. Fucking success.
It worked?
Success. I don't know why it didn't work the first time, Jeff.
Wow.
There we go. Greg, I don't know. Taylor's like, says his headphones keep breaking. Someone like is
knocking on
his
door. He's not using that SteelSeries headset.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You should just dump some Monster on it, and that'll be fixed.
Put an Intel motherboard in there or something like that. I do like it when he laughs. Now it feels like...
Oh, Jesus.
Having an effect on him.
All right.
I like the crying laugh before better, though. I'm gonna get back to that.
I'd be like, why were you cry laughing? I'd be like, well...
All right. Load us up on some fucking esports, Wheat. What are we talking about? All
right, what are we talking about tonight? Heart of the Swarm patch notes. We should probably start with that. So okay. You know what? Fuck that. Actually, yes. Let's talk Heart of the Swarm patch notes. I'm medicated. I don't know where we're going to go tonight. The show could go any way. We're talking Heart of the Swarm patch notes. Of course, a new update came out but 4 days ago. And the last time we talked, there was some kind of ridiculous shit going. Now, you guys had made mention that you weren't necessarily playing as much, rightfully so. Tournament's coming up, Wings of Liberty. But we still want to at least talk about some of the balance updates to see, you know, if they're making the right choices. So I'm going to bring these up right now. But here are the new changes that have been made. Mothership Core got a change. Oracle, of course, changed again. Like, I don't even know the Oracle's, like, what it's going to end up doing, but it just might be, like, the Oracle is going to be, like, a 1,000 mineral, 1,000 gas unit that's just going to have, like, a button that says fucking win by the time the beta is finished. But, no, Entomb has been lowered and the duration increased, so cost
They've
lowered.
Buffed Entomb so many times, I can't, like, it seems like it has to be overpowered by now.
Are they just like, why isn't anyone using Entomb for fuck's sake? I don't know if they're pulling data and no one's using it, so they keep on buffing it. But yeah, this has gotten through quite a few changes. I don't know. Jeff, this is your race.
Yeah.
What do you think here?
So a couple things. One of the most intriguing ones that you actually left off is, for me, the Sentry now has Hallucination as a given spell. You don't have to actually research that. And to me, that's something that will absolutely not be included when the game actually goes to retail. I can't imagine, because the Sentry is absolutely essential in all three matchups, obviously less so in like a PvP in the vast majority of the situations. But like a PvZ and even PvTs, you always have like three or four Sentries for the most part. To have the ability to always be able to hallucinate is insane. The scouting potential is ridiculous.
Yeah, how early can you get a sentry out? Like, that is like insta-scout.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not worried about high ground spotting, because right now pylons can't actually warp in on high ground, so...
Well, still for blink builds for that, even.
Blink builds become extremely strong. Like, 4-gate blink now, you make one sentry, it has hallucinate. You don't have to spend the money to upgrade that, so that makes PvP a little bit more... all matchups, certainly, but I would think in PvP it's where it's going to be felt the most. I just think that's ridiculous. I think that's way too much. Decrease the build time. Maybe lower the cost a little bit, but absolutely do not include it in the Sentry. Like, they've actually come out and said they're looking for a way to try and buff overall the Protoss race. And this is one of the places they're testing and going to. And again, it's worth mentioning, myself, but also Greg, have not been playing Heart of the Swarm, so maybe this is like the best thing since sliced bread, but as far as I can tell from where I'm at right now, it's too strong and it's too easy, and it's once again taking choices away from the player and just giving it to them, so there's less risk, less reward. How cool is it when you're commentating a game and you're like, oh my god, he's upgrading hallucination, what is that for? Or, you know, the Protoss that are so good about constantly scouting with Hallucinated Phoenix. That stuff's really awesome. And then, of course, Greg will tell you about Hallucinated Void Rays and how cool that can be, too. I mean, there's so many good applications for it, but when you take the investment away from it, it becomes less cool, and it mediocrizes the game, in my opinion.
I think the only way it becomes cool, Jeff, is if that means that Force Field becomes something you have to research. And in that case, that's just fantastic.
Now you're taking it too far. Shut your whore mouth. As far as the other changes go, like the Tempest having an upgradable massive damage, that makes sense to me. I think that's much better. It's funny because that one's like less intuitive than Hallucination, in my opinion, but they like flipped it around or like, let's make, you know, massive damage upgradable, but let's give the Century Hallucination.
Yeah, anyone else still finding it funny that they decided to put the carrier back in and then make changes to the Tempest? Like, I still...
Well, dude, then...
It needed changes. It did.
It
lowered the supply. That's the smartest thing they did in that patch, by the way.
The Protoss superior air fleet wasn't superior enough.
It wasn't.
They needed two capital ships.
Yeah, I really don't understand. I don't know. I really felt like and hoped that they would just remove the Tempest when they put the carrier back in and then start balancing the carrier. Instead, it seems like they just put it back in to kind of appease fans and then make the Tempest the thing that they want to focus on.
That said, like, just from an aesthetics perspective, like, the carrier is way cooler. Shooting out little interceptors, yeah. They each have their own little, you know, gunships and all that kind of stuff. It's a way, way cooler, more interactive unit than a big, you know, orb shooting.
Yeah, and the application of the Tempest, like, as far as, like, a multi-unit composition for an air fleet, it's going to be very weird. Like, I'll use it against Thors. And then against Zerg, maybe I use it to instigate the fight, but outside of that, it's like nothing else. So, I don't know. It's kind of weird. I in my dream of dreams, agree with Greg, where it's like reinstitute the carrier and then do what Noni talked about in his video and try your best to make it a more microable unit as opposed to just an A move and it's going to do its thing kind of thing.
Yeah. Like similar
to Brood War? It's really uninspiring.
Yeah, you saw that video, right, Payne?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was asking Jeff.
Yeah.
But,
what's that?
I was saying, like, similar to Brood Wars.
Oh, yeah, as close as you can get to that, for God's sakes. It was the coolest thing. And then as far as the Oracle, to be honest with you, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. It's like, that's part of the reason why I'm completely uninspired to play Heart of the Swarm right now is because I know that that's not the final stage for the Oracle either. It's going to get two or three more patches. They're going to change it. Entombed hasn't been imbalanced yet, but maybe it is now, but I don't know. That area of the patch doesn't really tickle my fancy too terribly much. Like, I like what they did with the Tempest, lowering its supply. I'm kind of baffled by the Sentry, and then making the Tempest, like, major damage upgradable. I think that makes sense, too. It's good that way.
As far as the Zerg is concerned, Viper got actually a pretty decent increase, I think.
Those are pretty big buffs.
Yeah, the Acceleration gets a pretty killer buff. And then the Radius of Blinding Cloud was...
That one seems like it'd be pretty huge.
Yeah, maybe really people... huge, right?
Yeah, actually, I just can't imagine it not being huge. That's big. That's... What is that? That's like a 33% increase on a spell that was already really powerful. And it kind of nullifies some very important things. Like, if tanks are sieged, they don't do anything anymore. You have to unsiege them and remove them. So that seems massive. I don't know.
It makes me think I would just skip tanks altogether.
Yeah, but with bio, I mean, like, Fungal plus Blinding Cloud plus Banelings.
Also.
Yeah. With Fungal, you can pretty much hold people inside the cloud. So anything that big seems like would have to be overpowered. But then again, I felt like that about pretty much every change I've seen. So maybe it's just not as big when you actually play it.
They said that too, though. They said that they'll always change something in a patch to the greater degree so they can scale back as opposed to try to micromanage scaling up.
That is actually a very, very good thing. That's something I felt like they didn't really do before. Are much more likely to end up with the more exciting, everything's overpowered, but equally overpowered, like more like what you had in Brood War. Yeah. Like StarCraft 2 seems like they were toning it down so much that everything just got kind of boring and half-assed.
What do you think about the Spore Crawler no longer requiring an evolution chamber?
I'm pretty sure what's happening is they're just trying to buff every race's detection because they're hung up on the Widow Mine, and they're trying to give other races counters instead of making the Widow Mine a reasonable unit. Like, Purify now does detection as well, plus the the faster Hallucination Scout.
I mean, should any Zerg ever die to a DT rush ever again if the Spore can just be made?
Like... You know what? In Brood War, your average Joe Schmo Overlord fucking detected, man.
Yeah,
StarCraft 2 brains, when I think back on that, I'm like, how did we all die to DTs all the time?
Let's bring Bryce on and ask him. He's an expert on that subject.
He would be like some esteemed fucking scholar. Like, well, it was the first time that the Dark Templar showed up that I realized an Overlord wasn't at the base, and that's when that base died. And then, you know, the people that played back then, they'll say, well, Corsairs were a big deal. Sure, but still think about it. Every Overlord detected. Every one of them. And guess what? Wraiths were fucking effective. It was crazy.
That's true. That's interesting.
I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I feel like the micro mechanics behind Corsairs and the firing mechanics behind Corsairs and Wraith were way more technical, way more skillful, and even cooler to use, I feel like.
The firing micro of the Corsair?
Yeah, the way it shot a small AE pulse.
Oh, just like the way its attack worked?
Yeah, like the way its attack animation functioned.
Oh, its attack animation.
Yeah.
It looked cool, but it didn't really have any effect on the gameplay. Like,
anyway, sorry about the headset. If I touch the amp on the side of my table, it just like cuts out.
My advice, don't touch the amp.
Don't touch it. Taryn,
hands off. Astro Gaming headsets are the best.
What?
No touching.
Ask Taylor what he thinks about the recent patch for Taryn.
Well, I mean, I expected it to be like Widowmine has been reverted back to its old form, but instead they're just like, hey, you know what? Well, maybe it'll just take longer to burrow. How about that? Like, how about we keep the fucking super missiles in?
Well, it's like they removed the Warhound and then sort of did like a weird sort of splicing of the Warhound's like rocket salvos back into the Widowmines. Trying to like hybridize the two units or whatever, but from everything I've played, the new Widowmines seem ridiculously overpowered against Zerg, especially. Zerg just doesn't have any like, I don't know, Greg. Like, what have you played at all? Heart of the Swarm?
Still not since the Warhound patch.
Okay, so like the new Spider Mines basically burrow down and they just have a 40-second cooldown or 30-second cooldown or something like that. They just fire a gigantic rocket that hits a huge AE. Pretty sure it one hits roaches in an AE. One hits lings up to like 10, 15 at a time. One hits mutas.
It does like a fuck load of damage.
It's insane.
I think that is the technical damage. Term. Yeah.
And like when I off race as Zerg against some of my friends, I have absolutely no idea what to do against them. Clueless. I've tried ultras. Broodlords certainly don't cut it because they can just run under your Broodlord's burrow and they blow those up as well.
Seriously,
they hit air.
That works?
Yeah, they
like,
hit air
they don't
and
die
ground.
Before they get in?
Oh, yeah. No, like you just run in like 50 of them.
Okay.
You know, and the Broodlords kill a few on the way in.
No, that's the change they've made in this patch is that the setup time, which I assume translates to the burrow time, is now 2 seconds to 3 seconds. So it's like half the time of a spore, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Which is still not...
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it would make that much of a difference.
It doesn't make that much difference. I don't know.
Did they increase the move speed, too?
No, man. They just...
Oh, they just kept it static?
They kept it the same. Setup time has been increased from 2 to 3 seconds, and the only other change they did was to the Battle Hellion. They've renamed it to the Hellbat.
That is by far the most important change.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
That's what I'm excited about. You know what? Let's not call it a fire bat.
Nope.
Let's not call it a hellion.
Let's combine the two. Oh, my God.
And then also.
Oh, my God. It was one of those things where, like, a fucking cup of coffee spilled in the boardroom. And they're, like, scrambling. And suddenly they saw fire bat and hellion, like, two pieces of paper. They just kind of came together and... Some guy looked up and he's like, "My God, it's been under our noses
compromise.
This whole fucking time."
You know what? It's either that or I could see something like it's up on a whiteboard, and it's the Hellion and it's the Fire Bat, and Dustin Browder's stroking, you know, the only hair on his head, and he's looking at it and he's going, "Holy shit!
Holy shit!"
And he fucking grabs his eraser and he goes up there and he scrubs off the lion from Hellion and the fucking fire from Firebat, and he goes, and he just fucking rewrites it together, and everyone's like, "The Hellbat! Do we change it at all?" And he goes, "No, that's the beauty of it. Just fucking
we
think
changed
it's
it by changing its name.
We had the Firebat and the Hellion. Let's create something new and original. The Hellbat.
Pretty
and
soon."
They're going to take the leftovers and they're going to make a fire lion out of it.
Just
fire
wait.
Lion. A fire lion.
That's the next patch.
Just wait.
A new,
until you blow up one of these destructible rocks, and suddenly from underneath, like a giant fucking magma explosion just like squirts randomly around the map, like just dropping lava, and it'll be great.
It's like the demons from the Red Bull thing. Just it'll be like the lions that are on fire just run around the map killing everything.
It'll be like the new Char tile sets reserved. It's like have destructible rocks around all the bases and shoot lava. But then, like, also, they added to the Terran factory the ability to produce battle hellions just straight out of the factory as if they needed to differentiate. So, like, before, you would produce hellions, and then you would switch them into battle hellion mode.
Right.
Switch them back into hellion mode. So, for some reason, they thought it was a pertinent idea to make it so that you could produce them in battle hellion form out of the factory, which I don't see any possible applicable situation where you would want pre-made battle hellions coming out of the factory.
Well, if your base is already under attack, there's like a bunch of circlings and they're surrounding your factories, then you would.
Okay, I guess I could see that. But they would just come out and get surrounded immediately. So it's like,
I'd rather surrounded than regular hellions do.
I'd rather kite with, like, you know, four to six old hellions.
What?
Well, yeah, battle hellions obviously are worth their weight in gold against.
They're
Link,
like made of fucking stone, man. They like never go down.
It's just a 50% increase in hit points. It's not like they gain armor or like change unit type.
That's all the changes for. Yep. I think this is update number 6, but they continue to bust them out, and we'll continue to keep talking about them. What's next? What do you guys want to talk about next? We got a lot of results that happened over the course of the last weekend. I guess we could go through some of those. We are seeing OSL and GOM, GSL. Pretty much getting ready to come to their epic conclusions. The fact that GSL Codest Finals is this Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ, man. I've spent more time moving around the goddamn Skype window because fucking Taylor keeps disconnecting than I have talking about other shit. All right. I'm just going to leave him like perpetually noodled. And then he comes back in and he like adds – you know, something to the conversation that is like actually has no relevance at all. Like the Corsair animation when it fires, Jeff. Like, all right, got it off my chest. All right, what were you going to defend him, Greg?
No. I was going to say it's even dumber because Race actually did have really cool micro, and then he like puts them and Corsairs in the same sentence, and Corsairs didn't do shit. He gets attacked.
Yeah. They were actually.
I knew you wanted to get that off your chest, so there we got it off. So OSL round of 4. Which now we have our finals, right? The last round of 4 game was played. We've got our finals. Hopefully I'm right here. It is Rain taking on DRG in the finals. Yep. Sorry if you just got spoiled. But what do you guys think about this? I mean, is this the best thing they could have asked for, a Kespa versus a GOM player?
Well, the best thing they could ask for is like Flash versus MC.
Well,
but
you're right.
This is a pretty good secondary thing. My only concern is that it might be kind of one-sided because Rain's worst matchup is supposed to be his PVZ. He like hasn't played any televised PVZs yet, to my knowledge. And DRG just beat MC pretty convincingly with unusual styles. I didn't see the game, so I'm just going from what I read. So, no. If Rain's PVZ isn't on par with his other two matchups, I could see him just kind of getting joked on.
Yeah, and... Actually, I had something to say, and then I lost it. I guess the point I was going to say is that MC has, in my opinion, still probably the best PVZ, and he got kind of shat on. So I guess the kind of coolness of the fact that everyone's like Kespa's really hyped right now. Everyone's talking about how they're the most amazing players, and they certainly are really good. In that MVP Invitational thing, or not Invitational? Yeah, it is Invitational, anyways. People are. That's what the kind of conversations being churned out. But that's what I was going to say. Shit. So you can see I was stalling. Dongregu very silently made it to the finals. By the way, I haven't been following the OSL really closely, but I keep a pulse on everything. I check Reddit. I check Team Liquid. I follow all the important people on Twitter, etc. nobody's like, wow, Dong Ryu's looking amazing. They're just kind of like, yeah, he won again. Yeah, 4-1 versus MC.
Is that surprising?
I think he's gonna silently win the OSL. I think he's gonna win it. People are gonna be like, Dong Ryu, good job.
To be fair, I think kind of everything about the OSL has been silent. It just feels like no one's paying attention to it. The only reason people are talking about Rain is because everyone's talking about him in general.
Yeah.
Like, I just think people
aren't
watching.
If he was in both finals, I think it would be hyped.
You know, Greg, I got to agree with you, but when the season first started out, there was obviously an immediate interest. I noticed a decrease in interest the moment they went to pay-per-view, the moment they became a subscription. And you know, we talked about this before, and I have nothing against pay-per-view. But you know what? I do kind of have something... Or I think it says a lot to organizations that will at least like, let's do a season and a half. Let's like, but to actually activate your sort of subscription plans in the middle of a season, I think that sucks. Like,
bold
I think
move,
that
Don.
Yeah, not only a bold move, but I think that it single-handedly just will hurt your, you know, will hurt your viewership, especially because I think we have a very, very opinionated community who likes to say, hey, you know, I want to see what I'm going to get before I'm going to slap down my money. And rightfully so. Like, you're going to test drive a car, right? So I do think that did have an effect on its viewership. Go ahead.
I think it was kind of dumb of them to do it that way, actually, because at the start of OSL, they still had the Kespa player Mystique. They hadn't really played in much of anything yet. I think that was before they even played GSL qualifiers. So all they had was like WCG and maybe WCS. And there was still a lot of excitement and interest in the Kespa players, and they could have used that to get people bought into pay-per-view, and then they would have already had the pass, so they just watched out the season. But like the newness, the shine and gloss of the Kespa players had already worn off by the time that they put in the pay-per-view. So everyone was just like, well, this league isn't particularly good. The production value is not that great. The VOD system's kind of messed up. I'm going to go watch the Kespa players in the other three tournaments they're playing in right now. Yeah. I think they really messed up the way they did that.
Yeah, for sure. I would totally agree.
And it's blocking like, them.
Yeah.
No one watches it. Yeah, there were like a lot of like minor sound issues with a lot of the VODs where you know, you hear popping and scratching for like a short duration, maybe a minute or something like that, and then you hear it cut back in. Some of the chopping, like the audio editing was clearly, I don't want to say amateur, but it definitely wasn't on the level of like, say, a GSL or an MLG or something.
Which is ironic because they have an enormous amount of production.
Really?
You know, but they're also like piggybacking, doing mix minus streams for the English stuff. They haven't exactly had like the best. I think their numbers have been fine, but I don't think they could certainly be producing a little bit better content. I want to go back. Hold on 1 second. Quickly. So Rain did play DRG in their group, but those are all best of ones. So, you know, like, I don't even think you can say, someone else mentioned this in chat too. It's like, I don't even think you can say, well,
it's a completely different game in a best
of
one.
Totally different game, right?
A two-base all-in is all of a sudden like the smartest move in the whole world, whereas in a best of three, maybe it gets shat on because it's, you know, there's just different things going on there.
Yeah. You just got to grab that one win, and there's no time to adapt to your opponent's style and recover. I think that's the biggest, if somebody throws like a completely unique style at you.
Yep.
I've said this before in the past, and I want to revisit again because I think it's still something that's kind of interesting for me with OSL specifically.
Yes, please.
Let me first and foremost say, this is more of like a, I want to talk about this technically as opposed to, I just think they're bad. But Doa and Moltrap have done a lot of commentating, and obviously there's kind of mixed reviews about that, but my technical analysis of this is, and by the way, Doa is a fucking awesome guy, Moltrap's an awesome guy, I like them both, not hating on him, but as the frontman for a league, it's really hard for me to see that and say, that makes sense. Like, the frontman, you know, Artosis is out doing shows, he's making videos, Tasteless even, is making videos, and that attracts people to the people, the Tasteless and Artosis, but then it also attracts people to the show that they constantly reference. And when they go out and commentate, they say, hey, check me out on GSL every single time. Yeah. And Moltrap and Doa, they have less opportunities to do that. And I've seen Moltrap produce some content, and people really do like it, so it's definitely out there. It's the potential to do this is there. But I can't help but to, I mean, you know what? I was the front man for NASL, and I did a shitty job of that for them. Well, kind of depending on people's opinion, but one way or the other, I had stuff that I could have approved on as well. That's kind of what I'm calling for here. I think Moltrap and Doa are the guys for OSL, but I feel like they should be out there more. They should be projecting their voices. They should be carrying people towards OSL, and they should become more frontmen as opposed to the only two English commentators that are actually doing the league.
Well, I mean, on that note, like, not everyone is, like, as great of a public speaker as you, you know? It takes a certain type of person to be able to engage with an audience, whether it's visible or you just know that there's 20,000 eyes on you at that particular time and trying to engage it.
That's, like, part of their job. Like, they're supposed to be good at that.
Well, no, I know.
That's what they're being paid to do.
No, absolutely. But, I mean, Doa worked at IGN for a while. I met him a bunch of times, hung out with him. He's, like, a really quiet guy, really cool, really nice, loves to play Magic cards, which I used to do when I was a kid all the time. But it seems like it's really hard for – and Moltrap's local in the Bay Area, too, in the Berkeley area. They both moved out to Korea. And he's very much the same way. He's, like, a very quiet, reserved, polite kind of guy. And it's got to be hard for him to, like, break out of that sort of persona and kind of adopt the persona that he needs to have.
Well, they kind
of market himself as a,
that's like saying I'm bad at StarCraft, so it makes it hard for me to be a pro gamer. Like,
no,
that's what the job is.
Like, I totally agree. Like, you have to market yourself as an entertainer, as a fanatic of StarCraft, as a knowledgeable broadcaster. There's a lot of different things that go into it, but one thing I can for certain say about Doa is when he first started casting, I didn't really enjoy his cast very much at all, just because I didn't think he really had a technical understanding of the game whatsoever. But when he was working at IGN, he was literally crawling through VODs from, you know, the early beta up until now, just watching 6-8 hours of StarCraft a day and actually, like, picking up on all the, like, trends in the meta game.
The problem is that won't grow OSL particularly.
No.
Right? Like, the bigger issue is that who is that spokesperson for OSL if it's not, like, the general media or us? Because we're not the spokespeople. It just happens to be something else we cover. But who is actually out driving this? And I think if you look at every league, you can sort of identify the people who are kind of driving it. I think the bigger issue is that Jeff's saying that, like, there's no one, like, driving this initiative. Right? Is that accurate, Jeff?
I buy what you're saying. Yeah. I buy what you're saying. Painters are about, like, neither of them are suited for this. So rather than go to the guttural question of, like, well, they should be fired and you hire appropriate people. Not everyone's willing to move out to Korea. Not everyone's actually a commentator worthy of the position to be commentating there. So I get that. But what I would do is if I'm Moltrap or I'm Doa, I'd look between the two of us and I'd say, we could do more. And even if they're not the best at it, they need to push that out there. And I saw people in the stream chat all talking about Moltrap's videos that he's doing. They're well-received. Do more of that. Incorporate Doa in it. Make it very blatantly OSL. Come check us out. We've got the best players on the planet. Make bold statements. Get people fired up. Say, Kespa players shit on the other guys. Why would you watch their finals? It's the second best final. Why would you not put that stuff out there? And they're not. And that's why I think we're looking at DRG Reign, and everyone's just kind of like, DRG's probably going to win.
I totally agree. And not to have my point misconstrued, like, I certainly don't think that their personalities aren't, per se, right for casting. I just think that they have a very different personality from personal experience hanging out with them than, say, like, Tasteless and Artosis. They're both very outgoing. They are really easy to talk to. They can interact with fans, so crowds.
It's more
super
an OSL
easy.
Issue.
Yeah. For sure. I'm just saying it's, like, very different personality types amongst casters. And they cater to different niche sort of viewership audiences.
Sure.
But is Doa still going to be the guy that's going out there and doing the OSL eventually? Because he had some medical problems for a while. I remember.
No, I think he's fine. All fine. Yeah.
Oh, he's okay now?
Yeah, he's good, man.
Yeah, because last I talked to him, like, he couldn't fly out there because his gallbladder had burst. And he's like, he had to stay an extra few months or something. But I'm glad that he's
think that was about a month ago.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
I think there's something. Oh, yeah. I think they're also looking for league casters for OSL. I just heard through the grapevine. Anything else about... Well, I mean, I guess it relates to OSL because it almost happened. Rain almost made the finals of two different competitions running simultaneously. However, it was MVP who pulled it out, and then it was Life who defeated... did he defeat DRG? No, that was round of eight, wasn't it? I don't know. Anyway, it's Life versus
MVP.
Talking
about the GSL finals?
Yes, the GSL finals. Thank you.
MVP versus Life. Life bopping Tasia. I don't think anyone expected that at all.
Yep.
And MVP beating Rain. I think we all. I think most of us, when we did this episode last week, we predicted Rain to win. But I think all of us said the same thing. Yeah, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah. It must have been 2 weeks ago, though.
We all kind of said the same thing, which is like, I think Rain's going to win, but fuck, man. I don't know. MVP just wins in the clutch. And he did just that. That's exactly what he did.
Yep. Do you guys know how many GSL finals MVP has seen?
I guess like 9, 10,
8.
It's a little high. It's actually 6, but that's still a fuck.
Wow, it felt like way more.
It does feel like a lot.
6 of like 12, maybe?
Yeah, right?
The stats about him and Nesty were the best. Like, Nesty's been eliminated by him 3 times, and all 3 MVP went on to win it, or something like that. Nesty's only lost to one other person in the playoffs, and things like that. Like, if MVP didn't exist, Nesty would actually be as good as Artosis says he is.
Do you think that
might be the most distinct quote I've heard today.
Do you think Nesty's going to make a comeback at some point? Because, getting knocked out of Code A. Recent, in this DSL, that's got to be.
I think the game's kind of like he's still good. Obviously, he's always going to be really smart.
Oh yeah,
the game's kind of passed him on. Like people have figured out the things that he knew, and so their better mechanics are just taking them past him. Plus, he's kind of old, and he's already accomplished a lot. It's hard to keep motivated in that scenario. I imagine him becoming more of a coach soon.
Do you think it has anything to do with like actual physical age and hand?
No, the age thing isn't so much physical. Like, no programmer has gotten to the point where they're physically incapable because of age to play. It's just like
it's
you
just
have other shit going
on. Real life comes at you.
Play. Yeah.
You got to start paying for shit. Your attention, you can't spend all that time on a game anymore because you usually have a serious girlfriend. You've got bills to pay, all that stuff. But I think if we're going to do predictions for MVP versus Life, you'd be an idiot to not pick. I mean, it's so funny, too, because Life beats Marine King, and then Life beat Tasia. Those are two out of the very short list of Terrans that I would say that are head and shoulders above everybody else. Maybe Polt is on that list as well, and certainly MVP. But I think he's been on, like, a monster road of CBT, and I think he loses – is it best of 7, I think, right?
Yeah.
4-1. 4-1 MVP. Maybe 4-2.
I would say that's fair. Life is a really, really good player, like maybe the best Zerg right now. Him or DRG, easily. But he's very stylistic, and he's been getting a lot of wins off his style in much the same way that Rain kind of was. And I said on the last episode, the fact that Rain had played a bunch of matches immediately before, that's going to give MVP the perfect opportunity to study what he does, and no one's better at actually countering a style and preparing for a series than MVP. Life is like literally 90-95% of his ZBTs, he does mid-game Lingban aggression. And Tage actually played into that. Tage is usually really good at being passive and patient and whatnot, but he was super, super aggressive in the semifinals, and that's just absolutely terrible in the way Life plays. MVP is going to go the opposite way with that. He's going to look at lifestyle, he's going to know exactly how to deal with it, and he's going to stick to that. He's not going to let the tournament, the pressure, the finals, whatever, get to him and make bad decisions. He's going to play the game that counters Life, and Life's game is really counterable right now. So unless Life really mixes it up, and we haven't seen him do that yet, he is a very stylistic player. I see MVP just destroying him, even though Life is incredibly good.
Well, I mean, Life can mix it up a little bit, but I mean, I definitely
his CBT has been very one-dimensional. It's like almost purely Lingbane aggression. Like he's very good. He can follow it up. It's not an all-in or anything. But if you shut that kind of thing down hard, and it can be done if you know it's coming, you can't really recover from that too well.
Yeah, like from what I saw from Life in the series between him and Marine King,
Marine King's style, I think, matches up with life just absolutely horribly.
Yeah.
He's incredibly aggressive. He doesn't scout a lot of the time, hardly ever. He's not anticipating tech switches, anything like that. But, I mean, he can get that far in tournaments, just purely reliant on his pure unit control, his micro, and his ridiculous macro. But, I mean, life kind of picked him apart, to be honest. I mean, every time Marine King tried to move out on the map, life would shut it down, crush his first move out, continue to expand creep, and he just looked amazing against Marine King. But that being said, MVP has a completely different style to Marine King. He's calculated. He sits back. He'll mech more often than not. You know, it's just a totally different stylistic matchup. And we haven't really seen life go up against the Terran of that, like, of that mindset. I think it's going to be kind of a mystery box, really. I definitely would give that.
Any final? The finals is this Friday. Should watch it. It'll be Saturday if you're in Korea, but late Friday night. I guess that is kind of Saturday here in the U.S. And although not really related at all, I actually got a chance to meet Nalra this weekend, guys. That was
I'm a little bit jealous, to be honest with you.
That was kind of a big fucking deal for me. And you guys know what he does now, right?
LOL.
Yeah, he is a League of Legends commentator for OGN.
That feels dirty.
Yeah, does
it's
it?
Wrong.
It's a not little
right.
bit.
Yeah. Dude, his games against Savior on Peaks to Bake Dew, some of the best StarCraft I ever played.
That's where Jeff learned to cannon rush.
If it makes you guys feel any better, he is playing League, but he does follow StarCraft 2, and he's actually really interested to see his old brethren go up against the, I guess, the new blood, you could say, in StarCraft 2. Keep in mind, all my conversations were, like, via translator, so I'm sure I'm, like, adding a few words here and there. But, yeah, it was kind of sweet to meet him and talk with him about that. I asked him if he would ever commentate StarCraft 2. He said no. So
really?
Yeah.
Leave that he would just flat out say no.
He just said that right now he couldn't focus on it. Because I have to imagine that he's just, like, you know, that he's just totally focused 100% on League.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Gotta leave that to the Firebat heroes of the world.
Leave what?
Commentating
about StarCraft.
No. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Greg, what's like the general consensus of like Firebat hero and like his ceremonies from Brood War in Korea? Like, do they love that, or is he like kind of a villain type character?
I don't know how the fans felt. I was on CJ, which is Savior's team, so they all kind of didn't like him because of it. But they had no personal investment in it. Just given Korean culture, it's not the kind of thing that most of them approve of. Although StarCraft 2 has gotten a lot more loose, and they take it a lot more like jokingly now. Although, no one has ever done quite what he did in StarCraft 1.
The naked hula hoop celebration still remains a little
naked
bit out
naked hula
there.
Hoop and then run into the
rubber
into
ducky.
The sea.
Rubber ducky hula hoop.
Yeah.
All right.
That's pretty crazy.
Anyway, I didn't mean to go off off there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, talk about a few things, a couple things coming up, still a few results from this weekend, talk a little bit about some of the hot news items that have been hitting StarCraft 2 this past week and a little bit more. So, guys, don't go away. We'll have more Inside the Game after this quick commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back for the second half of Inside the Game. Welcome back. It's episode 56 on this lovely October 16th, 2012. Picking right up where we left off, guys. Still talking about a little bit of the events of this past weekend. WCS Asia. If you guys like PvPs, then you fucking loved watching the WCS Asia. Which is kind of ironic because most people were like, dude, I loved watching it because I'm a Protoss player and I got to watch Artosis and Grubby cast PvPs. So it kind of was like a Protoss workshop this past weekend. But if you want to take a wild guess as to who won?
Rain.
Yeah, Rain. Look at this guy showing his face quite a bit. So, yeah. I don't know if you guys caught any of it. Because of the time difference, it was actually really hard for me to catch. I watched a few matches here and there in the morning. And, you know, I guess I would like to talk a little bit more about the games, partially because I didn't see them. But I will say, like, the WCS has had the most, like, just... One event is this way. The next event is this way. It's just like, I guess the consistency has been missed a little bit as those fall in WCS.
It just happens when you're like having a bunch of different organizations run your tournaments.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I think it's really cool in some ways how much it emphasizes how important the organizer actually is. Like, you look at Europe. Look at the DreamHack guys,
man.
Do a fucking amazing job, and it's a great event that everyone's super hyped for.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... Well, I won't use the MLG NA one because that's not representative of MLG as an organization. It's just the fact that they kind of blew it off and didn't really actually try and make it a good event. But then you look at WCS, and it's just kind of lackluster. There's not a whole lot of hype going into it. The production value is not that great. There's a bunch of glitches and stuff. It's just nothing compared to the Europe one.
Well, the way they explained it to me in Australia, the lead guys in Australia, WCS, said basically that, like, it was sort of like a phase one sort of thing to foster esports growth, small different communities all over the world, and that Blizzard frankly had the budget to do that, and that they hadn't been doing it before. So it was something that they wanted to experiment with, test the numbers, see the community's reaction to it, the community's perception of it, and then maybe in the future, who knows? I mean, they didn't discuss any of these kinds of plans with me or anything. I'm sure they can't. In the future, they might have some sort of like overarching global, you know, StarCraft community that's actually sanctioned by Blizzard.
It's interesting because, like, how exactly are you going to test the waters when you're obviously partnering with organizations that are going to have different levels of reach? Like, let's be honest, DreamHack probably has, you know, a ton more reach than, especially to the North American European market, than whoever did run the Asia qualifiers. Beyond that, you know, like, are you automatically going to see that, well, the numbers weren't as big, even though there were some great players and, you know,
right.
There are certainly... So, you know, I mean, I guess there's nothing you could do about that. You're either taking control of it or you're either, like, empowering all of the different organizations that have helped build up the StarCraft and the brand. But it definitely, like, the inconsistency is shown from event to event. And I just hope that, you know, maybe it will be like, dude, DreamHack kind of fucking killed it all year. Maybe we just have them do all our events. Or, you know, I mean, I guess MLG's was nice, but the biggest thing from MLG is that it was in conjunction with another tournament. Like, it definitely was not the focus of my weekend that weekend when another tournament was going on. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of like Painter said, it's just definitely the first effort, and the hope is that Blizzard's working with these different organizations, and then in year two, they refine it, they streamline it, right? It's maybe the Chinese company they don't work with, but obviously DreamHack, you bet your dirty ass they're going to do something with those guys. And then with MLG, they give them a little nudge and say, hey, how about you give a shit this time, and maybe they will.
Well, I mean, you know, it scares me a little bit, guys, because, you know, Quake 3 and Quake 2 and Quake were, like, some of my favorite games. I mean, really, that's where I started as far as esports is concerned.
Oh, absolutely.
Every day I go back and I think about, well, okay, guys, I'm not that pathetic that I think about this every day, but I think about this quite often.
Is that
id Software, like, they knew what they had. Like, they realized that their game was being played on a competitive level and, you know, that they could have probably done a little bit more to help it along, even if it wasn't monetarily, but more like support for the game. And they never really did it. And when you see Valve and when you see Riot and like all – I mean, fuck, even S2 Games and even Red 5 with Firefall and High Res with Smite and with Tribes, like these guys are getting behind. And I'm not saying that Blizzard's not, but it's just like I have to believe that they know what they've got. Like their legacy can't just be fucking forgotten in their offices. Like it's impossible.
Yeah.
And like, so, what's scary about that is that happened with Brood War. That's where the argument actually came from. Like, Blizzard's like, this is our game when StarCraft II rolled around. And the Kespa guys were like, we made this competitive. You didn't. And while that's not compelling to the highest degree, like, it's still Blizzard's game, they had a fucking point. They made that game competitive. They put it on TV. They put the biggest league out there. And it gave Blizzard 12 years of relevancy with a game that was made in 1997/8, like, holy shit, is that worth it, you know?
And then also, like, to touch on Wheat's point, like, with ID, another thing that's, like, really cool is that those game developments, you know, you mentioned that they knew that they had something special, and Jeff and Greg, I'm sure you guys can identify to this sort of with Brood War, in that things like bunny hopping and strafe movement, quick weapon switching, being able to trimp off of like jumps, basically all the different movement systems of the game were actually flaws in the game. They were bugs in the physics engine that weren't actually supposed to be there. Right. Stacking of mutalisks, you know, spider mines, you know, but yeah, exactly. The exact same kinds of things. And ID actually would take those things and incorporate them into the future developments of their games. So, like, you know, their version of StarCraft II would have all of those really cool, unique things, like mutalisk stacking. They wouldn't
try to take that shit
rework
out.
Rework it. Yeah, yeah.
In Quake 3, and the community was like, no. And they put it back in.
Yeah. And that's, like, what makes that's what makes a lot of really cool games special. Like, Diablo 2, I mean, all the little, like, flaws and, like, weird little quirks in the game that you figure out and you exploit, and it's, like, something personal to you, as opposed to, you know, a big gaming company saying, like, no, we want you to play the game our way. So, you know, we've contoured the game so that it has to be played in this specific manner, and this is the way we want it to be marketed. And I feel like that's just kind of, like, a weird new age sort of trend in game development.
I mean, since we're on the topic a little bit, I'm not sure how we got here from WCS Asia. I guess it was sort of a critique of Blizzard. But TT1 wanted me to ask you guys. He basically said, we asked them if they think if StarCraft II is going to phase out to MOBA games.
Like disappear and have esports be taken over by MOBA?
I mean, I assume that's kind of where he's going with that question.
No, like they're very, very different things. I mean, I think there's always going to be room for an RTS. I think RTS is a lot more readable than MOBA, just from personal experience. Looking at it, having not played the game, there's a lot of things that are very important to what's going on that I don't know. Whereas Army vs. Army, I've always felt, it's pretty generically understandable. Like, you miss a lot of things going on, but you see a lot of shit running into a lot of other shit, and some of the shit dies. I think that's much more intuitive than MOBAs. So I think it's going to always have that part going for it as an esport, and then it's also just two very separate audiences.
I could play devil's advocate to that, though, and say that having five individuals of an army fighting against five individuals of an army is quite a bit simpler than hundreds of individuals of armies.
Actually, it isn't, because having those five, each of the five has to be much more important, and they're more important through having all their different abilities and the items and all that kind of stuff, and that's much more specific knowledge that everyone doesn't get. Whereas a bunch of Marines, it's easy to see, I feel, that those are just like the equivalent of a bunch of little soldiers, and there's nothing particularly special about them, besides the fact that they're an army.
But think how many different units each race in StarCraft has, and how many different abilities each of those units has.
sense.
Yeah, but none of them are as unique or individually as important as the champions in a MOBA. So,
I agree. They're not like spellcasters with...
So it's much less important to have that specific knowledge than it is to watch a MOBA.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think... I think, like, I date back... My mind goes back to WCGs where you had Counter-Strike, Chrome 3D, StarCraft, and a fighting game, and maybe another FPS, like, for a while. Gears of War was on there. The discussion of, like, one game from a different genre overruling another game from a different genre wasn't really there. And I can kind of see that mentality being applied here. Like, if an RTS was ever to get phased out, I think it would take another RTS. I think if Dota 2 or LoL were to continue in this upward swing of popularity, certainly we're going to lose some players. Certainly, you know, some of our community figures are going to be like, I now host LoL events mostly, and I'm very loosely attached to StarCraft 2 as well. But because they're different genres, I don't think that one kills the other. I think that they both raise the bar, and I think there's an exchange there between the two. And maybe, like, for a while, by the way, for like a year or two, StarCraft was the only game that was being, like, really globalized and professional, and companies were coming in and saying, I want to throw down a wad of $1 million and get involved in this. Now we have Dota 2, we have LoL, CSGO, not there yet, but they're working on it. Actually, it feels kind of silly to mention it amongst those, so let's just forget I even said that. I wish we were talking about Counter-Strike, but we're not. But with those three games... I'm ecstatic that we see fucking DJ Wheat and Seltzer Please standing in front of an audience of like 30,000 people with a stream of 1 million people talking about a different game. Because guess what? I was talking to Anne about this. Well, Seltzer, she's of course a multi-game player, but she kind of made her CSN thing. That was hosting StarCraft events. She's so damn good at it, she's now going off and doing these other games. DJ Wheat, obviously, originally not a StarCraft guy, but in the last couple years... Wheat, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I would say it's fair to say you've made StarCraft kind of your home base in terms of this is where your content is originally generated from for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're now launching out and branching out, and it's not the other way around. I'm not seeing MLG hosted by that LOL guy. It's the other way around. I think StarCraft 2 is still the game with the infrastructure that's pushing it out there and helping other games, and I think that's cool.
That's actually fucking fantastic, Jeff. Like, I mean, no, honestly, like what you said is... It's pretty rock solid, pretty spot on.
It's on point.
Thank you.
Yeah. What were we going to say, Pain User?
I said it's on point.
Oh, right on.
Like the StarCraft, Quake, games like that with an incredibly, incredibly high skill ceiling have very similar attributes. So I know it was easy for me, and I don't know if it was easy for you, Wheat, but just to like make the transition from an ultra-competitive game in a different genre. Ultra-competitive game in another genre is relatively natural.
I mean, certainly it becomes much more difficult to, like, I think to, like, transcend genres than it does types. For example, like, you know, I mean, even though Quake and Counter-Strike are two completely different, like, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, they're aiming. Well, but what are their objectives? What are different? You know, but going from like probably one of the hardest jumps would have been like, you know, Counter-Strike to Warcraft 3, just because it's a different mindset. It's just like, it's completely different altogether. But anyway, all right. Let's
hold
talk.
On.
What?
Tell me real quick.
What? Your sound's breaking up.
Yeah. All
right. Yep.
Do I sound like a robot?
Yeah, you break in and out.
It's cutting in and out.
Yeah, sorry, Panzer. Yeah. I've been there before, and I had a pretty shitty mic for a while, and it sucks when people are telling you your mic doesn't work, but the last two sentences you said, we actually don't understand what you said.
Oh, well.
Now you're fine.
Next episode, I'll have a brand new headset. I'm really sorry about that, guys.
That's okay.
I didn't know it was going to break on me today, and I don't have a spare set laying around. Otherwise, I'd be using it right now.
That is okay.
Right on.
All right. Let's see what else. So, probably one of the hot topics this week. Stefano gets suspended without pay for the month of October. He's now moved into the GOM house, I believe, or Korean gaming house. And, you know, this is obviously a pretty big topic right now, especially coming off of the previous weekend, where suddenly punishments and how teams are reacting and how leagues are reacting really came to the spotlight. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, there was also during the League of Legends World Playoffs a big sort of, I guess you could call it, violation, and there was a major sort of cheating thing that happened, and the $30,000 fine was issued.
What?
Yeah.
What is this for?
What? Yeah. So Azubu Frost was issued a $30,000 fine for looking at a mini map during one of the games. So, you know, this brought a lot of discussion out, not only in League, but in a lot, you know, even in StarCraft. And then kind of like on the back of that, we then had Stefano getting suspended. And I believe that it is literally no pay the month of October, cannot even compete in some competitions, meaning he had to withdraw. You know, I guess this could change quite a bit for Stefano based off of what he's going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that one of the relevant questions here is that you guys are his teammates. You know, whether this was a Stefano or an LZ Gamer or even a Machine or, you know, something. I'd love to hear, you know, what is it? You guys have a teammate that got suspended. Does it actually affect you guys? Is it more like affect morale?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I was talking earlier. My camera looks like it's kind of frozen.
It froze a little bit, but I can hear you okay.
Okay. Well, I guess. Yeah, I love the answer.
Okay, wait. Wait a second, Jeff. There's definitely some crazy going on.
Thank you very much. Robot.
Ever since Pain User started roboting, then everyone started roboting.
Sorry, guys. Feel free to jump in.
Okay. I'm going to restart. I want to restart this call. I want to restart the call real quick. Okay. I'm doing it. I'm noodling everyone. Check this out. Bam, bam, bam. I'm going to restart the call. So I'll just call you right back. There we go. Bam, bam, bam. Anyway. What? I'm doing a show. Hey. What?
It's just... showed up on camera.
Sounds better now.
Okay, good.
Why is everyone noodled?
It seems like it.
Because the Skype was broken. Okay.
All right. So this is actually, for me, a kind of interesting subject because the way this was handled by the community and in the comments and the threads, I found it very, very interesting. And hopefully we can shed some light on this so that people kind of understand what's actually going on here. Number one, people are talking about, like, the severity of this, and they're comparing it to other events, and they're talking about, was he joking or was it real, and what does abuse mean? And those things, for me, don't actually matter. What ended up happening is on a public stream, Stefano said something that is extremely inappropriate. Whether he, you know, the specifics of the event, that actually doesn't matter. If it was a joke, it's a really bad joke. Like, you actually can't use that defense. If that's news to a lot of people in the world, where it's like, I go up to someone and say, like, hey, you're really fat, and I hope your family dies in a fire. And they're like, oh, my God, that's really upsetting. And I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm just kidding. That doesn't actually work. That's actually going to still get you in a lot of trouble. And the same thing here. So people talking about that, not really interested in it. EG coming out and punishing Stefano publicly is one of the biggest and most correct steps in the right direction. I think this community needs to see that. Like, when a player gets caught with, you know, like an NFL player or a football player or something like that, when they get penalized, they announce how much they're punished for and they put it out there because it acts as a deterrent, but also professionalizes the team. Let people know, hey, he cares about this and do something about it. Because if we don't do anything, this is what's weird for me. We need a short-term memory. When stuff happened in the past, behind closed door, and the outcome was,
Jeff, hear about it. Jeff, let me stop you for a second because you're starting to break up again.
Apparently, my head did a plug in the speaker. Everyone else.
My turn.
I don't know. Yo, let's try this one more time. Sorry about that. I don't know what's happening.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yo, let's try this one more time.
Yeah, 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 I do hear you.
Sorry about that.
Am I okay?
Yeah, you're good for now, yeah.
Okay, yeah, just cut me off again. I'm going to try to do some spurts. It's going to be really difficult, but I think we can all do it. Okay. The short-term memory of the community is such that when there was no transparency, the idea was that the player was above the law and wouldn't get punished, and that was really bad. So it's important that it gets announced and talked about. The backlash of that is that it gets put on news feeds that otherwise it wouldn't, but that is mitigated by the fact that people know that EG is taking steps against this. This is especially important, and this is one of my biggest points about this, because this in this day and age, in this community, well, the gaming community, I guess, if something questionable happens, the immediate knee-jerk response from enough people is to list the sponsors for that organization and contact each and every one of them and say, we will not purchase your product because you support X, and X equals the most vulgar way to put what happened, like the most shocking, you know. For like Greg's David Kim comment, it would have been like an attempted murder with obscene object from a sociopath. Like, yeah. These things are supposed to garner as much attention as possible, and the sponsors who are detached from that because they're off doing things like running the planet, they hear this and they go, you know, they're like some 55-year-old, 65-year-old businessman or woman, and they look at that and say, whoa, that's horrendous. And then they go down to the people that actually directly are involved with the teams, and they say, what's happening? What is that? And then that person doesn't have a really good answer. They say, well, he's 19 years old, he's French, and he's kind of an idiot. He says dumb shit. That person doesn't care. They say, we're giving them X many dollars, you need to fix that. So then that handler goes to the team and says, what are you doing about making that not happen again? And that's where the fines come in, that's where the public punishment comes out, and that's why we're here. So there was a lot of weird comments about people like, ah, fuck you, EG, like, it's just a joke, and like, I can't believe you're doing this, and they don't understand. It's part of a system of events that transcend esports. It's something that happens all over the place, and it's for these reasons. And that doesn't condone the actions of those people, because they're not being fair either. They're not actually offended. They're trying to start up, like, the way they're going about it, they're trying to cause the most amount of harm while like, then bragging about it in their threads. And I'm talking about, like, the shit Reddit says mini community on Reddit. I want to link our sponsors, and I want to link the uninformed people to those threads and say, look, most of the complaints you're getting are from these people who are actually just doing it because they're really upset about everything in the world. And that doesn't stop. That doesn't mean that Stefano did something that doesn't deserve to be punished. He absolutely does. But it does mean that we're in this weird dog-eat-dog world right now where there's people who just want to see the world burn. They don't actually have a vested interest. They just want to fuck with people.
Yeah, you've talked about this time and time again on the show, and it's something that I definitely don't find very constructive or productive either. It's like a new way that the fans have found to feel really empowered or truly empowered.
I don't
think
it's even fair to call them fans, because if you look at the...
They're not fans.
Yeah, if you look at the Reddit subforum...
Fanatics.
Not even that. They're just, like, explicitly instructing the people in the thread to go into the email and say, I am a supporter of eSports. I would have bought your product, but now I'm not going to. Like, they actually just, like, fucking with people and imposing their own set of morals on the rest of the world. In this case, it's obviously it was wrong what Stefano did. You can't joke about that, even if it was just a joke. You cannot say that in public when you're a representative of big organizations like we are. But if you look at something more borderline, we have a relatively mature community. It's a bunch of kids who grew up gaming on the internet, and it's becoming more professional, but it is still that. If you get people joking about something more borderline, and then they come in and do that, then the whole morals part starts to get more iffy. And overall, it's just them being assholes because they can be assholes, and they like feeling important.
And a whole other thing is the whole streaming issue. I mean,
you don't know half the time if your friends are streaming and if they're not.
No, that's not okay.
You just don't say dumb shit. You can't.
Yeah, but I know, but I personally will always tell one of my friends that messages me, you know, hey, I'm streaming, or hey, I'm on stream.
It doesn't matter. Even then, everyone has to be.
Hey, it doesn't make it okay.
Yeah, everyone has to be aware of of what the fuck they're saying and how they're presenting themselves. I mean, fuck, man. I think about if we just started a mental list of all the things that have been leaked, all the shit that's been said that shouldn't have been said, it got out of over a stream because someone just had that up or didn't realize they were streaming. I mean, exactly.
I'm not even going to tackle that. It happens.
It does.
Here's what's really scary for me. Okay, e.g., we do our sponsors right. They are fucking ecstatic with us all the time. So when something like this happens, we can go to them and say, look, we're going to handle this. We're sorry. We're going to continue to hit home runs for you, though, and you're happy. What fucking terrifies me is that if something like this happens from another 19-year-old kid on an organization that employs like 30 or 40 people that's opening doors and creating like passion-driven jobs for people that this is where their meaning is found, gets caught in a situation where they don't have the strength with their sponsor. And this kind of flood of emails comes in, and that sponsor goes, we just signed you guys 2 weeks ago, and we're already getting this shit? Fuck off. Like, we're done. We're pulling out. And then that company collapses. And it's because it wasn't handled correctly. Now, this is a very important distinction. I am not saying that when someone does something wrong, we ignore it. We're okay with it. It's fine. He's 19 years old. Who cares? But to go to the very most extreme reaction, I guess, short of like physical violence, to email their actual lifeblood and say, I am protesting everything about your company until you get rid of that person, that is the most abhorrent response. What you do instead is you contact the manager, you contact the player themselves, you contact the surrounding people via Twitter, email, whatever, and you say, look, this is really bad. I'm very disappointed. And it needs to change. I need to know that you're doing something about this. If they ignore you, if they do nothing, if they don't care, if the actions continue, then you take the next step where you send a very calm email to a sponsor that says, look, this kind of stuff's going on, and it's really, you know, it needs attention. But you don't say, I'm going to fucking protest you. The emails say, I'm going to tell my friends not to buy your stuff. Like, it gets weird. They get really aggressive about it.
That's the point where it becomes clearly not them trying to defend esports. It's them trying to get off on their own importance. Like, if you do that, then maybe you correct the behavior. Maybe you make esports better. But also maybe you scare off a sponsor who, had they not been scared off, would have made esports better. And if you talk to the teams know the implications of this. If they know, they have seen this happen enough. They've been contacted by sponsors enough who have been contacted by angry fans. They know that it matters if fans are upset and they end up going to the sponsors. If you talk to our team, if enough people talk to our team about something that happened that was inappropriate, they're going to do something. You don't have to hold the sponsors hostage behind their backs.
Yeah.
So going to the team is the actual way to fix this problem without then endangering the industry as well. But if you go to the sponsors, like Jeff said, the most important part here is they don't actually have context except for what you're providing them. No one who is supporting EG and who's supporting Stefano is going to message them saying, hey, he was just joking. It's really stupid, but he was just joking. It was just a little mistake. The only emails they get are, he said this horrendously inappropriate thing and you have to punish him for it. They see that. And like Jeff said, if it was a less robust relationship, they're just like, well, this is a terrible community. They're cannibalizing themselves and they have inappropriate things going on. We're going to get the fuck away from this. You know, that can happen just as easily because they don't have that context and because they don't know that this is a one-off stupid thing. Like, you're endangering what actually makes esports. So if you want esports to be okay, contact the teams. That is the way to fix these problems without actually...
And one of the sentiments in the chat, too, is this, like... And this is a very important point because this gets brought up every single time. I've, of course, ranted about this numerous times, so bear with me. But one of the sentiments that comes up is, Jeff, the people that are going to do this either don't give a shit, like at the SRS community, or they're going to do it anyways. And to that, I respond, that kind of mentality is poisonous. By us discussing it, even if just one person in this chat of 3,800 people is like, they previously thought, well, the best way to get things done is to email a sponsor because then I know Stefano's going to be suspended or Orb's going to be fired. I want that person to hear this message, and maybe that one fucking starfish is swayed to instead of emailing the sponsors, go about it in a more cordial fashion and instead believe that this community does not actually have the strength across the board to endure a flood of messages that say, this guy raped someone, we need to get rid of him. Like, that's the worst.
Yeah, so just to clarify, like, the general consensus, it was just being a friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Well, if you eat worlds, that was.
Hey, you guys hear me?
Yo.
Yeah, maybe somebody's DDoSing you or something.
Yeah, probably, because, you know, that's what...
If people have heard my end skipping, I've heard Jeff skipping, I've heard Greg skipping, and I've heard skipping you, all different ways. But anyway, what I was saying before it skipped out was that if you look at the duality between, like, real sports and esports, there's all this same kind of bullshit in real sports, too, but it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. All the players have agents and sponsors who represent them, who take care of their image, who can handle all this kind of stuff. But in a smaller gaming community, and also I think one of the huge things is that people are drawing conclusions from, like, in-game chat logs between two people. They're drawing conclusions from chat relay, from a replay. For a StarCraft 2, you know, a StarCraft 2 replay. This is not like, you know, these people have gone into bars, and especially all the, you know, racist talk of people being racist, things that people have said. It's like, it's not like these people are committing hate crimes or, like, acts of hate or tasering pit bulls in the NFL or anything like that. You know, it's really interesting how this community takes sort of and I think the free exchange of information and how rapidly it gets across the community is something that kind of leads to this sort of, like, pitchfork, angry mob sort of effect. And smaller communities, you know, like Reddit, sub-communities of Reddit are sort of hotspots for that kind of stuff. I just don't really, like, understand how it...
Well, it just goes to show how small we actually are. Right? Like, you know what? Even though over, you know, hundreds of thousands of people probably watched StarCraft and probably watched League this weekend, it's all still really fucking small. All of it. It's really, really fucking small. And if this isn't proof enough, and, you know, I think that makes people, like you'd mentioned, Jeff, the guys that just want to see the world burn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It makes them want to see it burn even more because they feel like they can actually destroy something.
Yeah.
You know?
That is the one downside of this actually being made public. Like Jeff said, it is the proper step. Like, when we do stuff that's bad, it should be punished and the community should be shown that our team holds a higher level of professionalism. But then if communities like the SRS people see that they see that what they do gets a rise out of people, and it actually they can make things happen. It just makes them more likely to try to do it again for lesser reasons.
It's a call to arms. We have to endure. Like, our guys have to become more wise about this. And guess what? Shit's going to happen in the future. Sponsors will be contacted, but EG has to continue to put gum in the holes and fill the cracks, and then the community has to get more well developed and well informed on what's going on. Like, if the rational, calm people can learn to handle this better and not get sensationalist, then those are the people we care about. You're always going to... You know what? Like, as sad as this is, one of my good buddies in the house, fucking Isaac, the co-commentator of Masters Cup, his community is disgusting. They DDoS every tournament. They like, stalk each other. It's sad. And that's what could happen. But I don't think that's possible in StarCraft 2. I think we're pretty well established and we've repelled that kind of behavior. But the reason I bring it up is because I need people to know, like, this kind of stuff does actually go on. People will actually just try to kill shit. And you can't stop them. There's not, like, some SRS apartment complex that only allowed these people to live there, and then we, like, you know, go all raid on them or something like that. And Wheat's got like a military hat and like double 50 caliber machine guns in each arm, just blowing down the walls. It's not going to happen. But what does need to happen is that we need to rise above it.
Yeah. One thing that deserves a lot of attention, it was actually asked in chat before we had all the problems, is whether or not positive feedback to the sponsors actually matters, and it really, really does. I tweeted a link to a thread on TL that's actually one of the better things I've seen in a while. Actually, just goes through and lists the sponsor of pretty much every major esports team and says, go ahead and contact them and tell them how awesome they are. And if you're going to buy products because they sponsor us, do so. If you just appreciate them because they sponsor us, tell them that. And that kind of thing really, really matters. That positive feedback is the reason that they are sponsoring
and
us.
You know, like, what? Thank God there's someone in the community that's like, you know what? I see all these people fucking burning down houses left and right. I'm going to actually pick up a brick or two and build some shit. This is how the community was for so many years, like early on, you know. Yes, we had our toxic fucking people in the community. I was one of them. But for every time I was toxic, I was also doing stuff. No, I was a fucking asshole in Quake 3. But I was also, like, doing things to forward the community. Of course,
Slasher.
Yeah. But, I mean, I had, like, tricked myself into thinking that, like, that was okay. And, of course, learned that, like, oh, maybe if I just did good, I wouldn't fucking, you know, I wouldn't need to. Anyway, the point is that, like, things have changed a lot. I don't understand when shit got so – well, I do understand. Well, it's when everything became so goddamn accessible. And I wanted to show this thread, by the way. If you just look up – it's called Thank the Sponsors Campaign. And it's not just sponsors of One More Game or EG. It's everyone. Complexity, Quantic, Root, TL, Axiom. It's awesome. Ghost. I mean, like, every fucking team you could possibly think of. So, you know, all those guys are always like, what can I do to help esports? This thread right here. I mean, shout out to this guy.
I sat across from Ken at Kingston, and we did a tour of the Kingston complex in California. And one of the things he said is, like, guys, we get so much good positive feedback. And one of the big ups in our company, Colin, he talked about just now messaged me saying, those commercials, those Kingston commercials, they pretty much exist because of positive feedback. Like, the first one got great feedback, so they did more. And in each of those commercials, it's not like staff members there with handy cams. It's a full-on professional production crew, and it's like they all get involved in it because they know they're doing something that's going to get people's attention and receive – it's going to get positive reinforcement. So yeah. It's as simple as a tweet and an email, and there's these people that will come out and say, well, if you're not buying something, you're sending false information to the companies. No, you're not, because you're registering their Twitter, you're on their website giving them foot traffic, you're telling them that you like them, spreading a message that could, you know, help you or someone else actually look to buy their products. Like, it's business 101, actually. Social media is a huge part of all the businesses right now.
Yeah, and
not just
honestly,
that.
Even if you buy their product, it's almost just as important to actually let them know that you appreciate the sponsorship, because these companies, Kingston and Monster and Intel and all them, they are gigantic. They have hundreds of marketing campaigns going on. They do a bunch of different things to try and promote their products. If they get in a few extra sales, they don't know where that's coming from. But if you actively contact them and follow them on Twitter and follow them on Facebook and whatnot, then they know that support coming from the esports community, and they know that that particular marketing campaign is being effective and that they need to keep working on that, because we do support them and we do appreciate the people who help our community. So that's actually just as important as actually going out and buying their products, which is also very important, of course.
Yeah. Monster. I was going to say, that's actually a really good point you made, Greg, like, about how important it is to the sponsors themselves. I mean, you can just really apply that to any situation in real life. Like, you know, if you're doing a good job working at your first job, your boss or your manager comes by and tells you that they've really been noticing what you've been doing, the progress you've been making, and they validate you. It makes you feel great. And essentially, what you guys are doing, well, not the players of EG, but like the EG management, is providing a service to these sponsors. It's their job to make sure that the sponsors' products are put out there, are taken care of. And like Jeff, the commercials you mentioned, like, plugs their specific products, also promotes the players that they want representing their products, and faces that they want representing their products. They're funny, they're humorous. It's something that hasn't been done in esports before. And frankly, I think it's brilliant.
as opposed to just the generic, you know, car ads that you'll see, or generic, you know, PC part ad that you'll see at a normal tournament. I think there's going to be a lot more of it in the future. Follow up to like what those commercials were.
Any final thoughts on this? I mean, I guess I want to go back to the original question that I had asked you guys. Is that, like, you know, how do you – I mean, obviously, by association, I'm sure you get a lot of shit that, you know, just, again, because it's a team association. But,
sure.
Like, from a morale standpoint, you know, does this – does it affect the team?
No. Everyone knew when Stefano joined the team that there was he's a rock star, man. He says dumb shit, but people love it. And the idea is he's on this team and he's a big superstar because equal parts he's amazing at the game, but also because he's really interesting. So you can't go too far over the line, and that's what happened, and he got punished, and that's the event we see here. But I fully anticipate him dancing like an idiot after winning multiple tournaments, shooting champagne at people, drop kicking Playboy models, and probably some, you know, other funny stuff that he does, and he'll be fined, and for some of it, and for other things he'll be lauded.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about whether or not Stefano would join the team, we both said he'd be a great acquisition, but EG is a more professional organization than pretty much any other team out there, and his personality is like it is going to cause things to happen that are not acceptable for EG, and this kind of conflict would happen, and then we'll move past it. Like I've said shit in public that I shouldn't have said before. And I've been fined for it. Like, it wasn't publicized the way this font thing is, so a lot of people don't know that. But, like, this is not the first time this kind of thing has happened. EG holds certain standards. And as public figures, who can be kind of controversial, we say stuff that doesn't really line up with that. And this is what happens, and then everyone moves on. It's just like, it's not a big deal. We'll just try and be better in the future.
So, question for you two. And you could not answer this or whatever, but what is the theoretical or hypothetical limit for EG, as far as the type of stuff that you would put up with from players when players have crossed the line, things of that nature.
I think that's too wide. There's like too many different avenues you can be inappropriate in. Like
I agree.
You can't talk about where the line is on each one.
I mean, we have a dress code, so when you see EG at an event, expect us in uniform and jeans, and when we're like, certain words you just don't say. This came up during the whole orb incident. A couple of those words that were of topic at that time, don't expect us to be using them.
Yeah.
But like Greg said, it's pretty subjective. Like, it could probably be in our contract that it says don't do dumb shit, because that would pretty much cover all of it. But like Greg said, Greg and I, and as well as other members of EG, we're opinionated people on shows. We're on streams a lot. And, it's not because we're the most PC people, so we just have to be careful and kind of be smart about it.
So it's not like they're violating, like, a set, you know, list of EG rules. You just interpret each situation as it pops up and sort of decide what the best course of action is.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about the other event that took place this weekend.
Real quick, though. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Real quick, this one?
Yeah, real quick. One? I mean,
yeah, you know, let's just touch on it really quick. Yeah, Thor's Bane won the Ace of Croc. Okay, moving on. No, in all seriousness, there is a couple of really cool things about this competition. First and foremost, the fact that this tournament was created as a result of leftover funds from a previous Ace of Croc. So, you know, I want to give shouts out to the good studio and to Asus ROG for doing that, because that's fucking awesome. You know, like, hey, we have extra money. Well, we could do this, or we could just throw another tournament. Like, great. They threw another tournament. Yep. It was an invite tournament, and for those of you who were following along, originally Stefano was going to be playing in this one, but this was one of the competitions that he was not going to play in due to his suspension, and so TLO replaced him, which was kind of a great tournament for TLO, because some of the few games I did watch were of his games, and I was actually surprised to see that Rhett was on the losing end of a lot of the games, and that TLO was actually on the winning end of most of his games, coming in to the semifinals. But did you guys get a chance to watch any of this weekend?
Oh, I watched most of it, yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Well, first and foremost, like you said, this to me is so exciting because Take's event is absolutely amazing, the Homestory Cup, and this was very much so of the same kind of style, but done differently. While there was player interviews after everything, we didn't necessarily see the players partying or interacting or hanging out. There's no poker table, so I felt like it was the same but different enough that they could function on the same level. It was still kind of a home production, you know, intimate event, but not on the scale that is Take's event.
Sure.
Which is really cool for me because Good Studio did a great job. I loved the awkward interviews. I thought they were freaking hilarious. As far as the players were concerned, you know, maybe in the future they dress up the behind the scenes a little bit better than just a white wall, but the players seemed to have a great time. It was a good prize pool, by the way, 4,000, 2,000 between first and second. That's good. And then eight players, and they're all European. I just thought the event itself was awesome, and just a huge shout out to the Good Studio and what they did, because I'd love to see more of that.
I thought TLO was a pretty interesting storyline. This, I was talking to Ben, who was talking to people who were there, and a lot of them were actually saying TLO was kind of the scariest player there to them, which I thought was really interesting, given that he hasn't been performing particularly well recently. We haven't really heard much of him as like a tournament contender for a long time, but apparently his time in Korea has paid off. They said he was really scary, and he kind of just fell to Elfie's early game bullshit, so we didn't really get to see what he was capable of.
Yeah. And you know, also big shout to Thorzane, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Like,
of course, yeah.
It's an 8-man tournament, and there's not a single name on that list that I look at and go, why are they there? You know, that's just kind of silly. Like, the groups were intense, the playoffs were intense, and Thorzane, I'm not even going to do this stupid curse joke because, God damn it, are we tired of that joke? But just to go in there and come out a win with that group of people is pretty amazing, and still shows that. While his results like fell off, which just meant that he didn't win two tournaments that he attended, he's still one of the best players out there.
It's the EG curse, man. That's why they fell. Nah, but on a serious note, I think that there was definitely some... TLO has always been, in my eyes, one of the most creative players in all of StarCraft. Like, his understanding of the game, even when he played Terran and Zerg, he uses both races in a way that like a lot of other people just never even thought about or really considered. And I know personally, having played him multiple times in competitions, you know, I've beaten him in MLGs, I've been knocked out by him in MLGs. And just practicing with him, he's the type of player that when I go into a game with him, I'm scouting every single freaking portion of the map. Because I really honestly he's so creative and he has so many different styles. And even with Zerg, he was using Burrowed Banelings really early on before everyone else. He was using, you know, like two-based sort of eco Baneling busts, like Kyrix style type play. And he's just a super creative guy. So I think it's great to see that he's finally been able to get over the wrist. I don't know exactly what was wrong with his wrist, but I'm assuming something similar to like what MVP had, RSI or carpal tunnel.
Right.
So he wasn't able to practice, you know, nearly as much as he used to and as much as everyone else. But, you know, once you can couple that sort of a mentality with the physical attributes to play that quickly, you've got a force to be reckoned with. You know, all my guys that I talked to have been saying he's been playing really good lately, all my old practice partners, all the guys on Team Light, Kawhi Rice, all those guys for sure have nothing but high praise. So I think that's really cool. And especially when a lot of the other Liquid guys, a lot of the older Liquid players, you know, have been retiring, have been falling off results-wise. You know. So it's cool to see him.
Well, people said that his sort of his unpredictability was one of his strengths.
Absolutely.
And I think it's kind of always been, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's sort of his MO a little bit.
Any player who's capable of doing any of the spectrum of normal stuff plus weird stuff is very, very scary to play against, because generally if you're playing against a player you know, you cheat a bit, you know what the tendencies are and you play to them. But with a player like that who's legitimately good at any kind of different thing or capable of doing any kind of different thing, you just can't do that. And that actually essentially puts you at a disadvantage to where you normally are against a player.
We do We do also have an additional tournament coming up this weekend that I want to at least let people know about. If you're looking for something to watch in addition to GSL finals, DreamHack ISO Open Bucharest will be happening this weekend. As so quickly the tournaments come around. So there is this round of 64 group stage into the round of 32 group stage. If you followed a DreamHack tournament before, you know how crazy some of those group stages could actually be. Could start off a little slow, but generally gets pretty crazy as it progresses further. You can see some of the names that are in here. Mista, who's been showing up from Empire a little bit. Ranged, Elfie, Nighted making her turn again. Sage, Seplo, Inca, Vines coming in from Korea. And then, you know, Nama, Rain, the Fnatic Rain. BCQ, Top, STC on the Zerg side, Sleep, sort of, TLO, Rhett, you know, kind of who you'd expect to see on the European side. But I think that, you know, we're going to see another great DreamHack event this weekend, and that's the one thing that they've been nailing this year is that I pretty much know I'm going to tune into a DreamHack event, and I'm going to get the same level of consistency, same level of production, typically really good games. So definitely want people to know about this. Any words on the DreamHack event?
I'm going to be watching all of it.
Should be good.
I'm going to get some pizza, six pack, put it on the big screen, hook on my laptop.
And watch.
Hang out all weekend long.
Beer and pizza at like 10 in the morning on Saturday.
Right.
Since it'll go from 10 to 4 or whatever. It does take place in Romania. So
that's where
you want to check out, make sure you keep an eye on the actual time frames and whatnot. With that being said, I messaged Goatlust because I'm like, we'll probably only have enough time for one call. That's usually Goatlust, and he's actually not on Skype.
Don't.
No way.
Really?
Don't. Would this be the first episode we don't have him?
It might be. He is offline. I messaged him about 15 minutes ago. I said,
what?
Hey.
Shit.
Say it ain't so, Wheat. Say it ain't so.
That's like, do we call his parents? I mean, what do we do?
Something's
going on.
Your sons have been calling our show for quite some time now.
Cut to the son.
Yeah?
Destiny wants to call in.
He taught us the phrase, fuck a dog.
That's a decent substitute for Goatless.
Yeah,
that makes for interesting discussion.
I agree.
Call Destiny.
Yo, what's up? Never disappoints with this man right here.
Oh, woo! Yeah, bloody hell. I thought we were making calls today. It looked like it was getting pretty fucking late.
Well, I messaged you on Skype, dude. You were offline. Like the
Wait, how are you going to troll us like that, dude? You
no,
have
seriously, it wasn't until he came up.
Yeah, I just turned Skype on then, mate. I don't keep any of this useless baggage up unless I know I need it, you know?
Right on.
You got a question for us this week?
Yeah, I sure do. whether it's 100% relevant or not, you know, that's to be decided,
we'll be the judge.
But
we've got leeway at this point.
All right. So anyhow, I don't know how much the three of you besides we caught of that fucking LOL Worlds, if any. But I'm wondering what you thought about like sort of the inappropriateness of some of those videos they were playing, you know, to fluff out the time between shit. Like, you know, that Kennen sort of filthy fucking whore of League of Legends and that other one with a bit of derogatory language in it. I'm wondering, what do you think of that, Wheat and Co?
So let me tell the guys what happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, generally, like, the League of Legends regionals, the playoffs, everything that I'd been a part of, it was very much PG-13, right? Even to the point of, like, PG-13 without swearing. Right.
Oh, the whole game is
sure,
violent.
Sure. So there was a video. There were community made videos that were played during, you know, some of the downtime. Which, by the way, was a really cool way to fill content. And I would, you know, I would encourage any league to maybe do something like that. And we've seen it done before. But anyway, there's this video, and it was about Olaf. It was about one of the champions of League of Legends. And at the end of the video, he pokes fun at another one of the champions by calling this champion, like, the dirty fucking filthy whore of League of Legends. And, of course, it gets a laugh out of everyone, but you're watching this thing, and all of a sudden you're like, what? And I'll tell you what, the word fuck becomes much more... like impactful when you don't hear it for a long time, right? So like you're watching, you're expecting something, and all of a sudden, like, bam, it comes out of nowhere. Like, what do I think about it? Well, you know me, I say fuck all the time, so quite frankly I'm like, oh yeah, I'm glad to see they use a word that I'm familiar with. But no, in all actuality, like, for me, the way that I see it is that gaming is fun. And the maturity, the, like, at least in StarCraft as it relates, I'm not quite sure about some of the other communities because it might be a little bit more widespread. But, you know, like, StarCraft is generally a bit more mature community, a little bit older. So I also don't find problems in you know, I guess reaching out to that mature audience. But I think what was so strange is that upon a clean broadcast, all of a sudden it was like this one thing was dropped. It was just sort of out of nowhere.
You can't have that contrast. It makes everything look so much worse than it actually
is. It was like at the very end of the video, and it was sort of the punchline of the video.
Was this like male players insulting other male players?
No, it was all in-game footage. And it was just like, and that's why Kennen is the filthy fucking whore of League of Legends. Like, that was the last line, and it was just kind of like, whoa. Okay. Wow. So Riot didn't make it. It was community made, you know. It was something you'd expect to see in, like, a community. But I guess, like,
they
did
obviously
I go,
didn't screen it either, though.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, that's yeah, the yeah, thing. Yeah. It's like, or they did and they didn't that. Care like, they because it was community. Like, yeah, I don't. That and that's just it. They can't have not screened it. So
maybe
on one hand, I'm like, it seemed a little out of place. On the other hand, I'm like, well, fuck, I can't.
I'm telling you, they didn't screen it, man. I'm sorry.
No,
I'll be the whistleblower again. You know, like 100%, they didn't screen it.
I don't know.
No guy at Riot sits there and sees filthy fucking whore of League of Legends. Okay,
but
let's broadcast that to a million people right now.
Yeah. Isn't it just as unimaginable that they would take content for the community and put it up on their stream without checking it at all? Like,
yeah, I know.
A little bit less so, Greg. A little bit less so.
Hey, GoatLust.
Yeah, mate.
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, mate.
What did you think of the LoL championship? Like, do you play any other MOBA games or just League of Legends?
No, not really. I just I've played them once or twice, but yeah.
Did you catch any of the international?
I did catch some of it. Yep.
How did you think of that compared to like the League of Legends World Championships? And what was like your overall thoughts on, like, the production of the whole experience?
Well, I thought, to me it seemed like Valve shot for a certain level, and they got it, they nailed it, but, you know, League of Legends was shooting even higher than that. They had a few fuck-ups, but, you know, they were shooting for something even higher, like going all out with fucking orchestra and all that shit, so,
yeah.
You know. It was a different experience in that way, but yeah. I mean, League of Legends had issues, but they were trying to go just ridiculously all out, so you can give them credit for that.
I've even heard some of the, like, MOBA community games are going so far as to stop teams from having multi-gaming organizations within the MOBA genre.
Oh my god, have you been fucking talking to Slasher? Like, dude.
No. Like, just some of my friends that, like, play MOBAs competitively. It's pretty crazy, right?
No, whether or not it was going to happen has now been retracted. Or not said, I guess, by them. I asked that
because it was all a misunderstanding.
Like, right,
yeah,
is what was said. That is what was said. That was what was said. But yeah. I just asked if you maybe were with what the fuck is the Muslim doing in his Tabasco pajama pants and shit. All right, we got to wrap the show. GoatLust,
all right.
I'm glad
thanks,
you came in.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. Have a good one, man. Peace. Bye. We've got Slayers versus Acer tonight for the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be a lot of fucking Zergs.
I think
it is
right.
Exactly two ZVZs and two PVZs.
Oh,
that sounds about right.
That's not too bad.
It's
only
bad.
Six of eight.
Six of the eight players are Zerg wheat. What's bad? Seven?
I'd be okay with that, actually. What's bad would be is you place Z with T, and then I can't
handle
it.
Yeah, it'd be terrible. I'd kill myself.
Yeah, I would kill myself, too. I would do that. All right, let's do our final thoughts, starting with Pain User.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks for tuning in. Please follow me on Twitter. I'm at PageUser on Twitter. And me and HT are still casting. I saw some people asking that in chat. We do still cast together. We're doing part-time casting at IGN, and we're working on an PhD tournament, too, for the Heart of the Swarm beta. But we're kind of just waiting for things to sort of settle down a little bit so the balance is, like, a little bit figured out because we don't want them pulling units in and out of our tournament while it's going on. So we kind of want things to settle down, have the metagame sort of settle a little bit for a few weeks, and then we're definitely going to run another tournament. We'll be casting that as well. Sorry about the mic issues, guys. I don't know what the heck was wrong with
I know what the fuck is wrong with it. It's not a SteelSeries headset, okay? Like, it's pretty simple, man.
Ship me one, man. I'm all for it. Ship me one.
Pretty simple.
But, yeah. Anyway, thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Word. Idra.
Thank you all for watching. Follow me on Twitter at Idrajit. I stream twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Or just follow me on Twitter and then do whatever I say, including like watch my stream and send us money in other ways and whatnot. And then thanks to EG and all our sponsors, Intel, Raid Call, new title sponsor, Intel, Monster Steel Series, King Sniper X, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. Big thank you to all of them. And, yeah, that's it.
GF.
Tune in to the Masters Cup. It's going to go on as soon as Isaac and I drive over to Sir Scoot's house and do that, so that should just be about 15 minutes from this moment in time. Big shout out to the Evil Genius sponsors, of course, our title sponsor Raid Call, but also the EG streams are now going to encourage you to actually hop into channel 9000 on Raid Call, and you can interact with the players or just talk with other people watching the streams, but that's kind of a cool new thing to increase your interaction with us. I'll be streaming, so In Control TV on Twitch TV. Follow me on Twitter, EG In Control. And then just a quick word to everyone. You know, State of the Game is something that's really important to me, and it sucks that it's something that's going to kind of take a back seat and perhaps be kind of over moving forward. But what I do want to say is I have gotten unbelievable love from the community and just supportive, nice, kind, friendly messages. And to each and every one of you, from the bottom of my heart, I cannot say this enough. Thank you so much. Like, I had a blast on the show. I had a great time, and I know it's important to more people than just myself, so it weighed on me really heavily. But to get the love that I did, it means the world to me, and just thank you so much. I can't say it enough.
Right on. And I was going to ask you about it. We kind of ran out of time. Maybe I'll go a little bit into it at a later time, but... I don't have much to say, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow we'll be live on 3. We've got the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup coming up. What?
You never said, "What's up, bitches?"
What? This time?
Yeah, when you started the show, you were like... Hey.
I actually don't normally start the show with "What's up, bitches" on Inside the Game.
Oh.
Believe it or not. Yeah.
Some variation of that.
Anyway, we got Slayers versus Acer coming up next. Thanks for giving all those good wishes to In Control about State of the Game. I think that's important.
Yeah.
And with that being said, thanks to our sponsors, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and Kingston HyperX. We'll see you next time on another episode of Inside the Game. Coming up next, the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup between Slayers and Acer. Thanks for joining us. See you next time. Peace.
Peace.